time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Yeah, sure, that's a ticket. 2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, with Ryloth under siege, Jedi Master Imagundai, Gundams, is trapped with Rebel leader Sham Syndulla. It's up to Bail Organa and Jar Jar Binks to negotiate with the neutral planet of Toydaria to send them aid. There will be Jar Jar Tricks, Bail winning the award for most patience, and a Jedi clone bromance that's death defying, but not really, because they still die. We're talking about supply lines this week. How you doing, Chris?
Pretty good.
That's good. You were telling me a lovely dog story.
Yeah. My housemate is house sitting for someone with a dog and three cats, so I've been going over and giving this old guy with stiff hips a walk every couple days.
Aww.
So that's been fun.
You like the dog whisperer.
I'm more of a cat whisperer, but I get along with dogs really good. This dog is really... I almost get the feeling that, like, these animals are so well-adjusted that, like, if their parents never came back, they would just adjust to whoever was there. They're very friendly. You know, my housemate's house sits for animals a lot, and a lot of the times, you know, when their masters are gone and someone strange comes over, they're all, you know, they're weird and...
Yeah.
Not these guys. the youngest cat, like, the first day there, like, jumped up onto my shoulders, and then I just put him inside my jacket, and he, like, curled up and started chewing on my finger.
Aww.
So, yeah, they're all softies.
Yeah.
But the dog was very well, you know, he was totally, I think he's pretty deaf, but he was pretty obedient, like... You know, if I wanted to turn down, you know, left down a street, all I had to do is sort of tug a little bit, and he was like, whoop, okay.
Yeah, I don't like my kitties. Like, my kitties like the people who live inside the house, but they're not really good with new strangers. I had a New Year's get-together, and my poor kitties, like, hid themselves down into... our workout room in the downstairs. They just refused, like, they were tiny balls under all the equipment.
Yep.
And they refused to come out, and it took about 2 days. Like, my cat Carmilla, like, she's my kitty, like, I am her human, she chose me and she loves me, and I'm the only person that, like, she'll sit in my lap and stuff like that. For about 2 days afterwards, she would not let me pet her. She would hiss at me like, why did you do that to me?
She was mad.
Yeah, and then she was fine. She was sitting in my lap again,
yeah,
like 2 days later.
Yeah.
But she was pissed off for about 2 days there. So my kitties do not like people, except for the people they know. But, oh man. So I just got back from a tiny vacation. It was a lot of fun, but the best part of the vacation is we went to a Goodwill and we found a videotape of something I never heard before called Bible Man. And it was
I've seen Bible Man.
Okay, so that's a thing.
That's with Willie, what's his name?
Apparently it's by someone who used to be on a sitcom or something.
He used to be on Charles in Charge with, what's his name, who played Chachi.
Yeah.
Willie something is his name.
Yeah, we get about 10 minutes into it, but it was just great because it was like, Power Rangers meets
the Bible.
Like, yeah, pretty much. But they were fighting with lightsabers, which is why,
yep,
I'm bringing this up. Because at one point they were fighting with, like, lightsabers, and, like, one of the guys, like, knocked down the guy with his lightsaber, and then he, like, dropped, like, some Bible-ness. And Bible Man came over and he was like, That was a very good use of scripture. We're just like, what is happening? But they were like, these are non-lethal lightsabers. And I was like, lightsabers are not non-lethal, but okay.
Scott Baio and Willie Ames.
Yeah, so apparently if you go on YouTube, like, that was a thing.
Which is funny because they starred together in a movie called Zapped, which was about Scott Baio being a science guy who gave himself psychokinetic powers and could make girls' boobies pop out of their shirts.
Haha!
Yep.
So, yeah, I just wanted to share because I get to see, like, a bit of a movie with, like, Bible lightsaber warriors. So, it was
Bible sabers.
So, are you ready to get ready for with surprise, supply lines? Surprise! Lines! Surprise! I'm about to read lines! Supply lines!
I am.
Alright, so, aka another episode where Dave Filoni gives everybody the finger. This was a good one, too.
And how?
Yes. Alright, so, huh. Supply Lines is the 47th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars and aired on September 24th, 2010. It was written by Stephen Melching, Yogan Mahoney, and with supervising writer Drew Z. Greenberg, and it was directed by Brian Callen O'Connell. Some extra information about the episode for you. This episode is a prequel to the very first episode of Clone Wars, Ambush, and it also takes place chronologically after the episode Clone Cadets, which we covered a few weeks ago. Robin Atkins-Downs voiced both Sham Syndulla and Jedi Master Ima Gundai, so he was talking to himself at points. And one of Sham's Twi'lek Rebels is Gobi Glee, and he made his first appearance back in the Season 1 episode, Liberty on Ryloth. Gobi returns in Star Wars Rebels fighting with Sham and Numa in the episode Homecomings and Hera's Heroes. I can't talk tonight. Gobi was in Rebels, that's all that matters. That's what I was trying to say. Gobi is also voiced by Count Dooku's voice actor, Corey Burton. In the episode featurette, Dave Filoni said, "Supply Lines is a really interesting episode. It follows the exploits of Bail Organa and Jar Jar Binks as they desperately try to negotiate with Keen Katunko." I practiced that name too. Katunko! Ah, I can't read tonight! To allow
Katunko.
The supply to go to Ryloth. What?
Katunko!
I think it's because it reminds me of a ramen, which you'll see in my notes, but so I keep trying to say Takansu ramen. So, they try to negotiate with King Katunko to allow supplies to go to Ryloth. It really covers how the politics are affecting the front lines directly. People's lives are at stake, and it's up to Bail and Jar Jar to persuade the king to help. Jar Jar is doing his best. It turns out that without Jar Jar there, they would have failed. His innocence and his ability to be kind, to see the good in a lot of things that lead him to a good solution to some of these problems. His innocence in doing this little dance and stacking these plates, well, you know, is it innocence? Is he that foolish and being that ridiculous? Or is Jar Jar finally using his ability to be perceived as a goofball as a political advantage here? It's a really bold move by him. And he shows, I must say, some amazing plate stacking skills. Jar Jar's entertaining, and he's a lot more clever than you think.
All right, whatever you say, Dave Filoni.
Whatever you say, Dave.
If you say so, dude.
I'm dreading the day that, like, Jar Jar shows up in Rebels.
We don't know
his fate. We don't know if he makes it to Rebels. He could.
Yeah, he'll be like the king of the Gungans or something like that.
I was literally about to say the exact same
thing. The wise old king of the Gungans.
And he's all just like, I still remember the time that I fought with Annie. And they're
like, let's not speak of it out loud so they don't get any ideas.
And they just be like, you know, Annie! He was Anakin Skywalker! He was with Obi-Wan Kenobi, who's not on Tatooine, where Darth Maul is! And Maul would just be like, can I kill him, please? Thanks.
Oh, they'll give him... He'll have a deeper, scragglier voice, because he's old, Jar Jar. He's old and wise. So he'd be like, Annie.
Annie!
You'll be like a little wizened old lady. Oh, God, no.
And Mike Vader would just show up and just be like, stop talking about me. And she'd be just like, wow, Annie! It's so good to see you again.
As an early supporter of Dave Filoni's Jar Jar trolling, now I'm getting a little bit of be careful what you wish for.
I actually, and I put this in my notes, I think I like Jar Jar in this episode. This was a good Jar Jar episode. But yeah. I am getting ahead of myself right now.
Way ahead.
Yeah. You know who also likes head?
Yes, I do.
Is that good? That was a good one.
And he's short and green.
He likes green heads. Or talking heads. Not like the band Talking Heads, but he probably likes heads that talk too.
Jesus.
I just like imagine like Yoda just like rolling on top of like a mannequin head and he's just like.
Well, I'm going to adjust this one a little bit. Because this platitude is actually an Earth platitude. And we only deal in space platitudes. So I'm
going to... Yeah, it's kind of dumb.
I'm going to make it a space platitude and Yodify it.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Where there's a space will, there's a space way. In bed. Oh yeah.
I thought you were about to say like where there's a force, there's a way. And I was like, whoa, slow down there, Yoda.
I don't want. I don't think Yoda. Maybe if our ratings drop down in like season 5 or 6, we'll have to start becoming more scandalous. But no, we're keeping it classy.
Act 1.
I'm ready for Act 1. You know I'm ready.
Alright, so here we go. Act 1. Because it's a day that ends in Y, Ryloth is under siege again. Well, I guess it's not under siege again because this is the first siege from season 1, so it's not new, but it just seems like it is, and timelines are really weird and stuff. Jedi Master Imogundai and Rebel Freedom Fighter Sham Syndulla are doing their best to hold off the Separatist forces, but the shit is quickly hitting the fan. Master Dai tells his admiral up in space to contact the Jedi Council for help. The admiral messages make it through, but they have lost the fleet in space in the process. Yoda states the obvious that Master Dai and his men are trapped. Thanks, Yoda, we know this already. The Jedi have no other choice but to call the one, the only, everyone's favorite fighting Onderon senator guy, Bail Organa! Let's get ready to rumble! Wait. But Jar Jar Binks is already in the mix. Turns out, Padme couldn't leave the Senate, so she sent Jar Jar to do some politics. The Jedi have sent a relief ship to a neutral planet of Toydaria, where Jar Jar already is. They want Bail to meet Jar Jar there and negotiate with the Toydarians to let the relief ship leave from there. Bail accepts the mission. Back in space around Ryloth, Count Dooku is playing Sudoku when his tactical droid says that they intercepted a Skype message between Bail and the Jedi. Dooku sips his tea and tells them to send Senator Lot Dodd from the Trade Federation to go do evil things. What did you think of Act 1, Chris?
Well, it's funny. It sort of goes along with your description. I'm getting all excited. I'm like, hey, Syndulla, I like him. Hey, Bail Organa. Yeah. Yoda, haven't seen him for a while. Oh, Jar Jar. Oh. And it's like, we have something important going on. Let's send Jar Jar. It's the same complaint as every time lately. The last, like, 2 or 3 times that he's been on. So we're getting a stew of the good and the bad started up here in this first part, you know?
You know, I just realized something, though. I bet, because Anakin's not on this episode, I bet Anakin and Padme are, like, on a tiny vacation together, and that's why she sent Jar Jar. Like, it was something she was supposed to go on, and like something like very mild, and Anakin was just like, send Jar Jar, and she was like, that's a great idea, and like they're like actually like having sex and making babies.
Right, yeah. Because Bail Organa love us for that.
Yeah.
But you know, as we'll see how it works out. But yeah, I had not a lot of thoughts on this one in the first part, except it just set itself up to go good or bad. You know, it could go either way at this point. And
yeah.
I like some of the, and now, of course, I'm always more excited about seeing Sham Syndulla because it connects with Rebels. It's all connecting again. And Bail Organa just connected with Rogue One. So it's always neat to see them. I'm wondering if those guys from Alderaan, man, they have good genetics.
Yeah,
he looks just like he does in Rogue One in this one. It's not Jimmy Smits doing Bail Organa's voice, is it?
No,
you mentioned who it was, didn't you? Yeah.
No,
he's very close.
I only mentioned who's playing Bail. It is, where are you? Phil Lamar, who's also the voice of Ornfree Taw and the tactical droid in this opening scene.
Okay. He gets it really close. There's a weird quirk to Jimmy Smith's voice that I can't put my finger on, and he really gets it, you know.
Mhm.
He almost has like this weird formalness, which is perfect for Star Wars anyway. That formal way of talking. Other than that, that's about all I got to say about that first part.
Yeah, I only had two notes myself. My shallow note was, I love when Obi-Wan tells Bail that Jar Jar is already on Toydaria, because he kind of winces and he says, Representative Binks. Like, Jar Jar, like, Obi-Wan actually, like, winces. They all know he sucks. And then my only other thing is, I love in the opening frame that we get to see Twi'lek women fighting with the men. In the original trilogy, there was a scene that was cut from the original movies of female pilots fighting. Like, there was three of them. And then in the prequels, we got some of the Jedi women fighting. We got some Padme. But now in Clone Wars, Dave Filoni is like, excuse you, of course the women would be fighting alongside the men. And now we have it in Rebels, too. So I really like this.
Force Awakens and Rogue One.
Yeah, so I love this kind of progression throughout the years. Like, in the original movies, the women were cut. And now we got a little bit in the prequels. And now Filoni, like, really pushed for it. He was like, yes, Twi'lek women are fighting with the men. And then it just kept going and kept going. And it's one of my favorite parts about Clone Wars is how conscious Filoni is with progressing this idea when, at one point, all the women except for Leia were cut out of the fucking movie.
Well, the first female pilot we see in Episode 1 is a woman.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I think she just says some sort of, you know, like, permission to land or some, you know, some really non-important line. But I think that's, like, the first line of Episode 1,
mm-hmm.
if I recall right.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought that was really cool. I was just like, yeah, Twi'lek women fighting. That's where Hera learned it from. All right, well, I didn't have anything else. All right, on to Act 2?
Let's do it.
Let's do it! So, Act 2. Bail arrives on Toydaria and is not allowed to leave the ship. Jar Jar pops up and some noises come out of his mouth. Bail gives the guard the political strong arm and passes by. Bail and Jar Jar enter the chambers of King Katunko, which sounds like a really delicious kind of ramen, who is not pleased to see them. Bail and Jar Jar give a rousing speech that Toydaria must be neutral to the Clone Wars, but they can't let millions of poor Twi'leks starve and die. And then Lot Dodd kicks in the door screaming, "Hold up! This party can't start without me! Listen here, King Elephant Bug. If you're going to help those guys, you're going to be using my money. I mean the Trade Federation's money to do it." And Bail was like, yeah, and your separatist boyfriend Dooku didn't send you here? And Lot Dodd is like, excuse you. Newt Gunray is Dooku's little lapdog. I have nothing to do with the Separatists. No siree. I wasn't sent here by Dooku at all. Oh, and Bail didn't mention to you, my king, that there's a Separatist blockade around the planet. So, yeah. And Bail is like, fuck yeah. Yeah, there's a blockade, but the people are still dying down there. And King Katunko Ramen must think it over before making a decision. Back on Ryloth, things aren't going so well. The droids are quickly overtaking Master Dai and Sham's camp. Dai can only do so much without aid, and Sham is like, I'm not listening to you anymore. Either get some help or fuck off. I got my daughter Hera, who will one day lead an awesome band of rebels, and she will fly the first B-Wing, and she will star in Rogue One, to think about here. If we're going to stay, we're going to die, Master Dai. Oh, hey, your name is like a foreshadow of what's going to happen to you. That's fun. And the truth is that they don't really have a way out of there. Anyway, back from Tordaria, it's Bail Organa versus Lada in an epic throwdown, a political night, cabinet rep battle fest like in Hamilton. Okay, not really. It's actually kind of boring. They pretty much go back and forth talking about Ryloth. Bail is like, oh no, the people need help. Here's Senator Ornfree Taw to cry about his people. Please help us. And Lot Dodd is like, oh no, my money. Save the money. And Count Dooku will be like, oh gosh, you're helping the Republic. Oh no. And wars are scary. And Your Highness, you don't want the Toydarian people to be put into this scary, scary war. And Organa sucks. And Lot Dodd rules. And oh yeah, the Trade Federation, they're not going to trade with you anymore. And King Ramen ceases their debate to think it over with his council. Back on Ryloth, Master Dai has a plan. He's going to blow up a gunship to block a ravine. The droids will have no choice but to go down one path. Him and his men will hold off the droids while the Twi'lek, Sham, and their families escape. Clone Captain Keeley says with a very heavy heart that it's a good plan, and he's going to go tell the men. You can hear it in his voice that he knows it's a death mission, so Sham better damn well be grateful. Back in Tordaria, King Ramen makes his choice. Tordaria will remain neutral and will not help the Twi'leks. Lot Dodd is like, woo! I win! I win! Bail sucks! Mini wave in celebration to me! And that's a reference from Friends, in case you're wondering. It's from the episode, the one with the football. Anyway, out in the hallways, King Ramen tells Bail and Jar Jar that they can send the few supply ships they brought with them, but they can't let Lot Dodd know it's happening. Bail is like, I have an idea, and it rhymes with far, far winks.
Oh. No idea should start with far, far winks. Jar Jar's infuriating in the parts where they're in front of the king.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether to get mad at Jar Jar or the writers for just writing it or for letting him be in such a position where he could do stuff like that, because if we're going with Dave Filoni on the three-dimensional chess thing, whatever, he's setting himself up to be misunderestimated. But It just made me uncomfortable. It made me uncomfortable every time he said something and was like cowering behind Bail Organa, and it was just like, oh geez. So I guess I was feeling for Bail Organa.
Yeah. Actually, I think Organa did really good to keep his patience and be like, excuse me for a second, and they like didn't throw Jar Jar off a railing. Mm-hmm. Just like, bah.
I don't know where this guy came from. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, and I mean, the Toydarian king was totally right to be pissed that, you know, they are a neutral planet, and Bail Organa was trying to deceive him, you know, and yeah. He kind of pushed his way in there too. You know, they're like, yeah, we don't. You know, receive aliens on our planet. And he's just like, oh yeah, well, you're receiving this alien and Jar Jar too. Come on, Jar Jar. So he was on shaky ground to begin with. I like that the Tordarian king did, and this was like like some real politics, as he did the sort of under the table deal with him and was like, look, you know, You can get one load through here. We'll let you do one load through here, but ixnay on telling anybody about it. And I thought that was a nice little touch.
Yeah. But, I actually really like the Tordarian King a lot. Because, we've seen, other leaders and stuff like that. Like, I keep thinking of, Doge Urus, and he was just, a dick leader. But we've also, and then we have, other leaders, like Shamsudula, who's kind of a dick himself. But, this is a really good king. And he's also bringing up, so many good points. And so, I like when, Lot Dod arrives, he's like, no, he can be here. We trade with them. And Bale's just like, oh, okay.
Well, I also like that they do, that, instead of, and I don't want to call it racist or whatever, but just go along the lines of it could have been some lazy writing. They could have made all Toydarians sort of like Watto from episode one and two and had him been like, hey, Jedi, what are you doing here? Oh, Jar Jar Binks, you can't talk to us like that, but no, we find out that most Toydarians seem really reasonable, and when you hear them arguing in the background during the court session, all the Toydarians arguing all have good points. They're like, oh, but people will die, stuff like that. So you find out that Watto's just one of those lone dicks that ended up in the far reaches because probably nobody could stand him on Toydaria. He had a falling out with his family because he was a crusty old prick, So yeah. I like that. I like that the Toydarians, and I noticed when you see them CGI'd and simplified a little bit, they might be distant cousins of the bugs, the Geonosians. Yeah. They're very similar to the Geonosians in a lot of ways. They're like Geonosians that have gone a little more mammal, around the edges, developed a different set of vocal cords or something, but they have sort of the same build. And I wonder if that has to do with the way that they fly, because I think Toydarians have gas sacs inside their body, that's why they're sort of short and squat like that, and maybe the bugs are like that too, to get over the fact that there's just no way that little wings on either of those species would keep them up. So maybe you sort of evolve like that if you're one of those little short, squat, flying races.
Yeah.
But that's about all I got for part two.
Yeah, I got I got some shallow notes and some bigger notes. Some of my shallow notes are I get the impression that Jar Jar had been there for a while there because Padme already sent him ahead anyway. So How did Jar Jar get off the platform?
I got the impression that he was just sitting on another ship, bored, and was like, hey, another person.
Okay, because, I was under the impression that he had been there for a while, because, the Jedi already knew that he was there, and so, I figured he had been there at least a day, and I just like him sitting on a platform, and the poor clones that had to fly him there are just like, oh my god.
He's inside wanting to play cards with him and stuff, and they're just like, oh no, I think we're gonna take another nap, sir.
No, sorry, sir, but you're not allowed to leave the ship. If you leave the ship, we'll shoot you. Leave the ship. Leave the ship.
You're only allowed in empty rooms with no buttons.
I also just love the idea that, somewhere on Ryloth, Hera is a little girl hiding out in the middle of all this fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, Shan's like, my family's with me, and I'm like, where's Hera? Where is she? And I think it was, what was the name of the episode?
With the two clones?
Huh?
With the two clones, are you talking about?
No, I'm trying to think of the Rebels episode. It's the one where she flies the B-Wing for the first time. In it, she was talking about when she was a little girl on Ryloth during the Clone Wars and how they used to hide underground and how she would, look up through, the cave openings up at the stars and, dream of flying. And so, like, that's how I imagine Hera is right now. Like, they're all trapped in this camp, but she's, like, with her mother in this cave, and she's just watching the ships flying overhead, just going, I want to do that one day. And that's such a cool idea.
Yeah, Disney's really beefing up this universe nicely.
Yeah. I also think it's a little funny that Bale is like, please listen to this fat Twi'lek senator as he talks about the suffering of his people while he's, like, just got back from dinner.
I know. I always picture him, he should have just a turkey leg in his hand all the time and be just like, and our people are dying.
Yeah. And so, like, I always love that moment. And this is a me thing, but Lot, like, there's something going on with Lot Dodd's hat. It's bigger than normal, and its proportions are off in this episode. Like, it's like half his body height. Like, his hat is massive.
Oh, do you want a hat moment that'll ruin some Star Wars for you a little bit?
Yes.
I was watching the scene from Empire Strikes Back again, where Darth Vader and Luke are where he cuts Luke's hand off and Luke's out on the platform about to jump and he's telling him he's his father and all that.
Yeah.
If you watch that, watch the top part of Vader's helmet. The wind machine is it's like plastic and it keeps blowing it like back, like he'll tip it a right angle and they keep cutting away from it. But if you just watch the top part of his helmet, you'll see it getting blown around like loosely on top of his head.
Oh.
Yeah, in Empire Strikes Back, of all things.
Speaking
you know
of
how many times I've watched that, and then I was just watching it, I'm like, whoa, his helmet just moved. And then I'm like, oh, there it goes again. And there it goes again every time you see him. So, yeah, check it out.
I will say when I was on my vacation, we did spend like 15 minutes watching YouTube videos of children reacting to that scene when he finds out that that Vader's his
great.
Father. Those are wonderful. So, anyway. Okay, so my two serious notes. The pace in this middle part, though, with all the politics, drags.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, really slow. This is the slowest part of the episode.
The politics are interesting in this one if you follow them and you think about them, but it's not presented as smoothly as they've done in the past where they've really made it work in the episode more.
Yeah, it does not work in this episode at all. I'm glad that they added the bits with like Ryloth fighting, because that really helped move the pace and break up the episode.
Right.
But like, this was not their strongest showing of having politics in Clone Wars. And then my only other note is I actually kind of wish this episode was back in season one with the other Ryloth episodes. And the reason is that back in season one,
almost look like it's back at that level a little bit too?
Maybe. I didn't notice that. But maybe. Because Bale looked really nice. His design is like much better than I think the season one episode. So maybe they try to like tone down the Twi'leks a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But like the reason I wish it was is that Sham back in season one was like really questioning Mace Windu. And he had that really prominent question of, like, when am I going to start fighting you, Master Jedi? And so, like, since this episode is earlier chronologically, like, this is before that. And I would love to see it with that, where this is really the first time that Jedi are clearly failing Sham. Like, he's pissed. Like, his people are dying. And the Republic and the Jedi are all failing him. So it would have added, like, if this episode was before that Ryloth trilogy, it would have really been a nice build-up to that moment with Mace Windu.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because he pretty much was going, Master Jedi, I mean, I watched one of you guys get killed and you failed me. Like, why should I believe you now? So I kind of wish this was back with that episode. But that's just me. This is such a really weird place episode.
I agree. There's a lot of weirdness to it.
Actually, season 3 is just really weird with chronological stuff anyway, because we've already had, like, Clone Cadets that was before the entire series. We have this one, and I think there's another episode later in the season. It's a Cad Bane episode, and it's before the season 1 finale where he took over the Senate. Like, there's a lot of time jumping in this season, and it's really weird. But that in that episode, though, would not have been a good introduction to Cad Bane. So I understand why they did it. Then at the same time, like, why do we need an episode where Cad Bane kidnaps C-3PO?
Oh, Jesus.
Do I need to see Cad Bane kidnapping C-3PO? Is that needed? Like, they're just
C-3PO trying to find should really not survive any kind of encounter with Cad Bane.
Yeah. Like seriously, like,
you
the whole episode
not.
Is...
Yeah.
Is Padme's throwing a party. She needs some fruit. Anakin sends C-3PO and R2-D2 to go get some fruit. And Cad Bane kidnaps them and then releases them. That's the fucking episode. Why is that needed?
Droid catch and release.
Yeah, like, why... Like, I don't need that episode as much as I love Cad Bane. Like, so, like, Season 3 is really weird. And it has a lot of, like, bouncing back and forth throughout the... Like, it worked with, like, say, Clone Cadets, because it was nice to learn more about, like, the Domino Squad. It doesn't really work... This episode's out of place, and there's a few other episodes out of place in Season 3. So, yeah, that's how I feel about that.
I hope Cad Bane at least puts a little tag in C-3PO's ear.
That would have been smart, but I don't think he does. Yeah. So, Act 3?
Moving on!
So, Act 3. Like any great politician, Bail Organa throws a dinner party. Bail gives Jar Jar a communicator to let him know when the ships are ready to take off. Jar Jar's job is to keep everyone distracted. Bail Organa bails out of there! Leaving the king.
I see what you did there.
I've been, like, trying to figure out where to put that in this entire episode when I was writing it. I was like, I want to do a joke about where how, like, Bail, like, bails people out or something. So Bail Organa bails out of there, leaving the king and Lot Zod with Jar Jar. On Ryloth, it's time to start the death mission. Master Dai apologizes to Gobi, Sham's right-hand man, for the lack of Republic support. The least they can do now is give the Twi'leks a chance to escape with their family. And the fight begins. The droids move forward around the gunships, blocking the pass. The clones blow up the ship and block the ravine. It's only a matter of time before the droids find their way around. Back in the upper crust of Downton Abbey, the dinner party is underway while Bail loads up the ships with supplies. Enter Darth Jar Jar. He uses his stealthy... I hope you're playing the music. The blah music. He uses his stealthy Sith mind tricks to captivate the room. I was about to say... decapitate the room. Demonstrating his ability
that
to use
That would have put an interesting twist on this episode.
Demonstrating his ability is to use the Force to stack plates and cups. He easily keeps everyone distracted as the ships begin to fly away. All the ships escape, and Darth Jar Jar has won this battle. On Ryloth, Master Dai and Captain Keeley face the droid army with what's left of their men. Master Dai gives a mighty shout of, "For the Republic! For the Twi'leks!" And they fight. The clones are killed one by one until only Master Dai and Captain Keeley are left. Even after a bomb explosion, Captain Keeley gets to his feet to fight with his Jedi General.
Okay.
Together, they
take a deep breath.
Together, they take out a few more droids, but they are both overwhelmed in the end. The bros go down together as the Republic 8 arrives. Master Dai is killed knowing that the Twi'leks will fight another day. Sham watches the supplies arrive and he's just like, well damn, they came through for us. Back on Twidaria, as Bail and Jar Jar prepare to leave, Lot Dodd is like, hold the freaking phone a second. I just heard the Twi'leks got supplies. And King Ramin is like, is that a bad thing? Can you prove that we did it? And Lot Zod is like, no, I can't prove it, so I'm just going to make some angry sounds now. Blah, 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 blah. And Bail and Jar Jar giggle like girls going, we did it. And King Ramin is like, well, maybe I'll consider Toydaria's neutrality in this war. Or reconsider Toydaria's neutrality in this world. And Bail says, well, I'll tell you what, we'll just rewatch episode 1, Ambush, and we'll see how that goes. I'm sure Yoda and his three clones will beat the crap out of Asajj Ventress to show you how cool the Republic can be. The end.
That could be arranged. Has been arranged.
Ha! Darth Jar Jar.
Yeah, that sequence did not do it for me at all. That's the kind of use of Jar Jar that, alright, maybe the kids like it. It did serve a purpose. It was just, I don't know, it was awkward. Awkward.
Actually, because I have two notes on Jar Jar too, so before you go on, let's go ahead and just talk Jar Jar for a second.
Okay.
Just get it all out of the way. So, I'm going to have my not serious and then my serious one. Because cue the music again, Chris. I'm going to talk about my favorite fake theory, Darth Jar Jar. Here we see Jar Jar, and he uses his mind trick to hold the room. And because remember, guys, I'm trying to prove that Darth Jar Jar is a thing. And so we think that Jar Jar is silly, but he's actually using what Dave Filoni is saying, so-called innocence, to hold their attention. He's not really actually innocent. He's just being, like, evil. And while they're waiting for him to fail and smash all the dinnerware, but not today, he's able to use the Force to hold together the plates and the cups and the statue together. And he must act like he's helping the Republic, but it's so he can strike another day with an even deadlier force. And even in the episode featurette, Dave Filoni questions Jar Jar's so-called innocence.
See, I was gonna say, how could he be evil? If he was evil, he would have messed up and let them see the supplies sneaking out. But okay, I guess that works.
Yeah, but in all seriousness, though, I'm gonna have to disagree with you. I think this is a fantastic use of Jar Jar, and I think this is how his character should be. I don't think, like, I remember Jar Jar talking in the earlier debate scene, but he didn't talk as much as I remember him talking before. Like, pretty much once Organa's just like, let me do the talking. Like, Jar Jar actually, like, would throw out a few...
Let him do the talking, yeah.
Yeah, and he throws out a few good points, like, people are gonna die if you don't help with them. But, like, outside of that, like, he mostly let Bail cover it. And then, here's Jar Jar. Like, he knows that he has to hold the room. And he knows he has to do this to get this done. And he doesn't in a really... A long time ago, in like one of our earlier podcasts, you compared Jar Jar to Roger Rabbit. That's pretty much what he did. He was silly and goofy, and he kept their attention. Because, you know, every person in the room was like, he's gonna break everything. And I kind of forgot, like... I watched it with the subtitles, so I got to catch, like, his little lines, and he had a few funny lines. Like, one of, like, Lot Dodd's, like, little helper friend, Jar Jar was like, did you enjoy that? No more! And I was like, that's really funny! Like, he's just going
If you say so, Hope, if you say so.
I thought it was funny! He picked up a chicken leg, and he was like, are you eating that? And you're not eating it anymore. And I'm like, that was cute. So I actually really like this use of Jar Jar, because earlier in the episode, it wasn't a lot. And then he came through in this moment at the end. And he let Bail do the politics, and he was the decoy, and I think that's a good use of Jar Jar. Except for my follow-up note of, why didn't they just put the dinner somewhere else that doesn't have windows?
Yeah, close the shades. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or like, you know, just choose a different room, or have it on the other side of the palace, or something. Like, that could have just fixed everything. Like, we wouldn't even need Jar Jar. Just, like, have the dinner in another room, but not on the side of the palace
right.
with the big fucking windows facing the spaceport.
Right, I'll meet you down in the bowling alley where there's no windows.
Yeah, or, like, just
Space
go out and start it on the other side. Just have it in a different room. That would have fixed all the problems.
Yeah. So. Just take them to the bar where you can get them half-crocked so they don't know what's going on.
Yeah. So... What do you think about the rest of the episode?
The dead Jedi part was pretty intense. It was more intense than any other dead Jedi parts where we've had in Clone Wars, I think. It was more like episode 3 with, you know, just the finality of a circle of people without the clones, obviously, but, you know, just sort of being encircled and just worn down. And how frustrating to them that the last thing they see are the supplies arriving. And it's just like, oh, geez, well, that could have been 10 minutes. Jar Jar would have stacked those plates a little quicker.
Yeah. I mean,
well, actually, no, that wouldn't have affected it. But, yeah, you know what I mean? It was...
Yeah. That was like a borderline Order 66 moment.
I think where this episode failed for me... was it just, and I think this is where a couple other ones that didn't work for me, it didn't have that, the cohesiveness that the other episodes usually have, where even though you have two different things going on in two different places, you would have like this, like very like Toydaria would have a very distinct, should have a very distinct look and like color scheme to it and style to it, and Ryloth or whatever, but it just seemed, it didn't have that visual. There were some nicely shot scenes and nicely put together battle scenes, but it didn't have that, I don't know, panache, I guess, that...
There's a lot of standing around and talking, even in the battle
scene.
Yeah,
and like, if you're going to do all that stuff, add some style to it to keep it moving and to differentiate between, you know, the two different places. And it was almost jarring when they would go back and forth. It just didn't have that, like, visually designed look that a lot of the episodes have, that most of the episodes have, you know.
You know what I just realized? We're three episodes in, and we've only had one real episode with Obi-Wan and Anakin and no Ahsoka yet.
Right, right. Yeah.
That's really weird. Because, like, they were in last week's episode with the attack on Kamino, and Obi-Wan's in this one, but he's standing there talking. Other than that, there's... Yeah.
Just this, like, is, Yoda. Yoda's in it, too. And I was like, ooh, you haven't seen Yoda in a while, but he doesn't really do anything in this.
He states the obvious of, they're trapped.
Yeah.
Thanks, Yoda. We know that. I mean, so, like, and that's, don't get me wrong, like, I like Jedi Knight episodes. I think it's fun. I like seeing Bail Organa, and I like it. I like seeing episodes where it's other people figuring out situations without the Jedi there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, that was a big problem with some parts of season two, is our golden trio wasn't together, and also, like, they, when they are together, they weren't used well. They're not, it's two out of three episodes in, we don't have our golden trio, except for two of them last week. Like, this is a problem. Yeah. This is the journey of, like, yes, it's the story of the Clone Wars, but it's also the journey of Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka, too.
Yeah, but they're, like, especially when you have Anakin and Obi-Wan involved, there's, you can't do, you know, you have more, you have a lot more story possibility if you start working away from those characters a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you can have people die or, you know, and have fantastic things change in their life where Obi-Wan and Anakin, really, you can't.
And I like the extra characters. I like the extra stories. I like seeing, like, this is a story about Bail Organa. I like stuff like that. But I also think that characters like Obi-Wan and Anakin are more interesting than Organa.
Mm-hmm.
They're much more interesting characters. I would have rather had someone like Padme there instead of Organa to be negotiating this. And she has a past with Ladon. He tried to fucking poison her. Like, even actually, no, this chronologically is before that. Fuck chronologically timeline shit. But still, like, that would have been more interesting, because then that could have set up something like in Senate Spy, where she's just like, oh, I remember, I haven't seen you since Toydaria. Like, that could have been, like, a lead into Senate Spy or something like that. So, like, I just think that there are other more interesting characters to use, and I love Bail Organa, but I think that there's also more interesting characters like other people.
Well, I mean, certainly we could have done without Jar Jar.
Yeah.
At least in my estimation. It's weird. We seem to differ on Jar Jar episodes on whether we like them or not.
Yeah.
You seem to like the ones I don't like, and I seem to like the ones you don't like.
Yeah, I mean, like, in this one, like, you know, I still don't, like, love Jar Jar or anything, but I thought this was a good use of him. I thought this was one of the better times, opposed to the last time where he was, like, the clones tricked him into talking to an animal and, like, riding an animal, and he saved the day just because he literally fell on top of a tank and blew something up.
Uh-huh.
Like, that was terrible. But, like, this is, like, Jar Jar actually being kind of coy.
Using his brain.
Yeah, like, I think this is the first time we've seen Jar Jar use his brain, and I liked it. Mm-hmm. I like when Jar Jar is smart. So.
You would think I would, too.
Yeah.
That's about all I got.
So, I don't know if I actually like the fact that the Toy Darien dinner party table floats. Like, the table floats.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I like that, because it makes sense with the Toy Darians, because they have wings. So, like, that's a good choice for them. But everybody else, if they had to go to the bathroom or, like, fall off their chairs, they would just fall to the ground. So I don't know if that's a good design choice or not. I like it for the Toy Darians.
Maybe they're like a barber chair or something. You push a button on the side and it lowers down or something like that, you know?
But, like, I was waiting for someone just to, like, go falling off the chair. Just like, ah! Like, honestly, Jar Jar, all Jar Jar had to do was, like, kick La Dot in the face and he'd fall to the ground and, like, bust his skull. And that would have solved everything.
That would have solved a lot of problems, yeah.
So, and Jar Jar probably would have went to jail for attempted murder, so it's fine. I also, but the other part about that scene that I really liked is when Jar Jar was just throwing food off the table, there's that one Toy Darien guard who would just kept shaking his head and he would just kind of like move off to the side to avoid the food. Like, I liked that guy.
He was probably just thinking, huh, politics.
I like that. Politicians. I wish we had more of that soldier. He was really funny. I liked him a lot. And finally, okay, so here's my big note for this section. The battle with Master Dai and Captain Keeley is still so heartbreaking and brave to me. Because they know they're not coming out of this battle alive, and they still valiantly give their lives for the Twi'leks. And that's so cool. And Sham better be damn grateful. But also, it kind of makes Sham a bit of a dick later on, because this Jedi and these clones lost their lives to save his people. And relief came, and the Republic came through. And Sham still questions Mace Windu later on in the Twi'lek trilogy from season 1. And it also adds, like, much later to Sham's character in Rebels, because he doesn't trust, like, any outside help. Like, when Hera shows up, like with the Ghost crew, he doesn't trust them. He's right. Like, Hera, I'm going to do this all fucking on my own. Forget your friends. And Hera's just like, there's a bigger picture, Dad. It's not just Ryloth. And he's just like, by the way, Ryloth is everything. And she's like, no, Dad, it's not. So, like, this is a really good character episode for Sham, but it also makes him a huge dick. Because here's this captain and this Jedi who died, and they came through for his people, and he still doesn't want to accept help. Like, that just makes Sham a huge freaking dick. Like, two dicks on his tails, on his head.
Well, it's better than a bag of dicks.
Yeah, like, he's borderline bag of dicks. Like, and it's just a nice setup, and it goes back to me wishing that this episode was back with the Ryloth trilogy in season 1. Because Mace has every right to go, we lost a really good Jedi to help you one time already, so you should kind of trust us, and we got through.
Well, maybe so, when this is all over, when we get all through these, we should do an out-of-sequence viewer's guide where we make suggestions of, like, maybe flipping a few of the episodes around, you know, that would be interesting to do in viewing order, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I almost watched Ambush when I finished this, but I had some other stuff to work on. But I almost went and, like, right into Ambush after this, just to see, like, how it continued how well it continued. Yeah. But I didn't, and I kind of wish I did. And so my only other note was, Kevin Kiner's music is really great when Master Dai and Keeley are killed. That's just a really, really good scene. And I also really like Captain Keeley's design with his hair. It reminds me of Kix. It's very similar to Kix from the 501st. Mm-hmm. We'll see more Kix's. I don't think he takes it off his helmet until season 4.
He's got the Miami Vice stubble.
Yeah, and he also has the thing shaved into the side of his head, and so does Kix. So I really like that design. And he has a kind of like, it's like brown hair, like a much lighter brown hair. And I like that on the clones. That's a nice design there. So, but Kevin Kiner's music in that scene is just really, really pretty and sad. So, yep, that's all I got.
All right,
you're gonna drastically rate this episode much lower than me.
Yeah, I've been trying to sort of get you ready for that. Yeah, not a big fan of this episode. I didn't hate it, but you know, compared to other episodes. It didn't have the visual style and pacing that they usually have, and which is too bad because it had a lot of good elements in it, but it just had no flow to it at all. And then the Jar Jar-ness of it, the Jar Jar-ness was just the nails in the coffin. So I'm giving this one, I don't know if I've gone lower than that. I'm giving this one a 6 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, Clone Wars episodes, I don't think we're going to get any 2s, 3s, 2s, 1s, or even 4s or 5s.
I will have those, and I know exactly which 4 episodes.
Okay, well, maybe I will then. But this is like, yeah, this is, as a low point, it's not that bad of a low point. So
yeah.
that's a good thing, I guess. But yeah,
I think there was another Jar Jar. Like, there was another season one episode. I think it was like one that I rated like a 6, and I think it was the very first Jar Jar episode. Like I had like a 5 or a 6 for that one.
Yeah, I probably gave it like an 8 or so. I remember something like that. I really liked that episode. I gave it something ridiculously high. Well. I guess it's good that we don't agree all the time.
Yeah.
How about you? I know what you... I'm looking at your score right now.
Yeah. Well, I like this episode. I mean, I remember groaning last week when I realized that Jar Jar was going to be in this episode.
Uh-huh.
But I forgot how much I actually kind of really enjoyed this episode. While the pace does really, really harshly drag in the middle act, it's a really good show of how politics directly influences war, which is really hard to achieve in Star Wars. I remember there's a part in the prequels, I think it was episode 1, where we're like, we've been talking about politics for 20 minutes.
Right.
And it's really boring. And so, like, Clone Wars is really good at balancing the politics with the war. And it's much better than it does in the movies. I like Bail in this episode, and this is... I still argue that this is one of the best uses of Jar Jar so far in the series. And Sham is just so shady, and it really sets up his actions in the season one Ryloth arc, and this episode really sets him up how he is in Rebels. And so Sham just gets a lot more shading in this one, and Master Jai and Captain Keeley's death still gets me, and they're such sweet bros, and there's a moment when Captain Dai looks back and he realizes that Keeley's down and he guards him, and Keeley gets up and he's like, "You're still alive," and he's like, "I'm here with you, General." I was like, yes, boyfriends, no, you're dying. And they're just, like, really sweet. So I gave it a 7 out of 10. So it was a pretty average episode of Clone Wars for me.
Yeah, I'm just going just below average.
Yeah.
On this one. Yeah, no, not a big fan. Sorry.
It's all right. You're allowed to dislike things.
I know, I'm not sorry.
Easy there, Palpatine. As always, we would love to hear your feedback at iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week's feedback is from our Facebook page from Aaron about our commentary for Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, speaking of Palpatine, yes.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll do it in cheesy Palpatine voice. Well, here we are, the end of the prequels. What a wild journey it's been.
You know what you're reminding me of?
What?
There's been a thing all week of Mark Hamill reading Donald Trump tweets
in the
Joker voice.
Okay, yeah, I've heard those, so I'm more Joker than Palpatine.
But that's just what you're reminding me of.
Oh,
those
okay.
Have been hilarious. But continue.
These past 3 episodes have been an absolute delight and definite highlights of the show. I could go on to talk about how Padme is possibly the worst mother-in-law in film history by not even giving an ultrasound to find out how many babies she was having.
Stop for a second. By the way, it's never been, like, told in Star Wars that they get ultrasounds.
That they have ultrasounds? You would think they would, though. They're flying around in space.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, that's never been established. And what about all the mothers in media who didn't even know they were pregnant and they decided to abandon their babies? Continue. Padme is not a bad mother to be. She did the best she can. The only thing that Padme suffered from was a terrible script.
Yes, bad script.
Very bad script.
Okay.
not even getting an ultrasound to find out how many babies she was having, or how fast the pregnancy went, or how, as Hope so truly pointed out, completely character assassinated, which I never before realized but now makes so much sense. But instead, I just want to thank you guys for 6, well, closer to 9, I think, hours of just pure fun. I hope that maybe next year we get some original trilogy commentaries. Thanks for being one of the bright spots of the year for me, and here's to 2017. It's just breaking down now. And another great year of J Guys.
Yeah!
Yeah, I'm not going to do that again.
Yeah, it was great.
I'm going to do this next part again, though.
Poor Aaron. You're now going to be forever a Palpatine voice.
Hear that?
Yeah, I'm jealous already.
Crinkly, crinkly.
Oh, and I'm hungry right now. I'm hungry.
Now, we recorded our episodes and released them weird, so we've only done one of these, but it's back, the Kit Kat review. I was griping about how crappy American Kit Kats were, and Dario Gonzalez sent me Kit Kats of the world, and this one comes from France.
Oh, Dario.
There's a place in France where the naked Kit Kats dance, and now this one's gonna dance in my mouth.
Draw me like one of your Kit Kat girls, Jack.
This isn't just a regular Kit Kat.
Sorry.
I don't know why that's cracking me up, but that's pretty funny.
I thought it was like a Titanic thing.
This is a French dark chocolate Kit Kat.
When you bite into it, you should start playing like the Titanic theme song, like you're here.
No, I have there's something. I have something innately against Celine Dion.
Oh.
Anyway, here we go.
While you're chewing, I'm going to tell you about a funny meme I did see.
Oh, my God.
Shut up. I hate you.
Wow, this is real dark chocolate. Oh, this is like making me do the chocolate dance, like when... I like getting those, like, bars they sell at the grocery store, the fancy ones that are like, you know, 60% cocoa.
Yeah.
And 70% cocoa and stuff. That's what this is like. It's really, it's nice and bitter.
I like the ones that, like, are dark chocolate, but it has, like, sea salt mixed into it. Like, that's just perfect. Like, chocolate and sea salt are, like, a match made in heaven.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this is real, and I haven't eaten one of these Kit Kats since I haven't opened up another pack since it's been like 3 weeks since the last show we did it. Oh, this is good. All right, now to the second Kit Kat. Oh, it's so good.
So mad at you. Just gonna angrily drink my coffee. It's hazelnut, if anybody cares.
It's almost as if, I don't know if it's because it's dark, but the chocolate has an almost softer feel, you know? Mm. I don't know. My house is kind of chilly, so it's probably not because it's melty. It's fantastic. Thank you, Dario.
Dario, I need a Kit Kat.
I don't know what flavor we'll do next week. We got a bunch left. There's orange Kit Kats in there. I even have an American Kit Kat that my roommate gave me that she got from somebody else that's red silk Kit Kat. And she described them as decadent. So we'll have an American one thrown in there. Ah, so good.
Shut up.
What's funny is after we're done, I'm going to go have me some lasagna. And it's just funny having my appetizer be Kit Kats and then lasagna.
Okay, now I'm just really, really, really hungry.
But that's how I live. Oh, we'll get you some Kit Kats. Don't you worry.
You better. Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me here in my chair, enjoying delicious, sweet, crunchy Kit Kats.
Oh, and you can, know. This might be a good lead-in for a new show called Eat It or Beat It.
I was gonna get to that.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I love that design. That's such a cool design.
Dario Gonzalez and I have crafted. We got together in the summer, and there were a whole bunch of us cooking food, and then started talking about porn, and the conversation sort of continued to Paul Spataro's house, and I remember sitting over the table at Paul Spataro's talking to Dario going, you know, we actually really should do a podcast about food and pornography. And we've recorded the first episode. By the time you hear this, we've probably recorded a few more. We're going to get a few of them in the can and figure out how quickly we record them, to figure out how quickly we're going to put them out. But yeah, we've got together, planned it, recorded the first episode, and let me tell you, we got material to go indefinitely. And we're going in all different directions with it, too. I mean, you know, we are well aware that we are two, like, white, straight males talking about pornography, so that limits, you know, if we're talking within our, you know, within our interests. Or, I mean, we'll check out stuff outside of our interests, but you're not going to get the perspective on it that an enthusiast would give. So we're going to try to get women on, we're going to try and get gay men on, and anything in between, you know.
That was my question. I was going to ask you if other people are allowed to come to the show.
Oh yeah, we're definitely going to have guests on. If we ever get like a porn star on, like Ron Jeremy would be great. But if we ever got like an actual porn star on, my idea is we'd make them come on the food part of it and talk about food. If we ever got a chef on, we'd have them on the porn part. But it'll,
actually, a lot of, and I just know this from a comic that I love called Ojo Sex Toy. Like strippers love talking about, or like pole dancers. Let me rephrase this. Pole dancers, because you can take pole dancing classes.
Yep.
They love talking about their art and stuff like that. So you might actually be able to easily get someone who teaches pole dancing classes on. Mm-hmm. Because that's actually, you can like take that as like aerobics now. Like you can go to a gym and like take pole dancing.
One of the most sketchy things I ever saw was the street at our corner is called Monroe Avenue, and they wanted to have a like street festival.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they set up at the street festival was a pole. And they had, you know, two women, and they were like 30s in basically, you know, a spangly bathing suit, like two-piece bathing suit. But they were teaching little girls, like 6 to 10 years old. And so there were all these little 10-year-old, you know, girls in bikinis, like pole dancing on the street at noon, and we're driving by, we're like, ah, this might get a complaint. Somebody might be sketched out by this. I'm sure it was totally like it was, but it was a very strange scene to see. Anyway, you can find me at twotruefreaks.com where we keep all our podcasts, and I don't know if Eat It and Beat It, which is going to be our food and porn podcast, will be up and running by then, by the time you hear this. But it'll be soon. It'll be very soon. My co-host Dario is a flight attendant, and he knows lots of other flight attendants who are willing to also record record their voices for the intro to the show. So he's going... You know, he's going to have a whole collection of lady sexy voices, but he's going to get some male, like, Spanish accent voices going and stuff. So it's going to be fun.
Dario can do a segment of, like, sex from around the world.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We have lots of ideas. We have a porn roulette idea where people send us a word, and then we go to, you know, a porn video site of, you know, one of those sites and just put that word in the search engine and see what happens. We'll and we will not be looking for porn-related words, you know what I mean? Something random that you throw in there to see what will happen. I can't remember what the law is, the internet laws, or even just the law of if there's something there's going to be porn about it. We did an experiment with it, and we put in the word guacamole, and it came up as a positive. We got videos, which... not glad I saw them, but... there they are. So that's what that's sort of the stuff you could expect of the show. I don't think it's going to be as sleazy as people think, but I don't want to also say that it's not going to get sleazy. It might get sleazier in the food part. You know, we might, when we're talking about food, we might actually get a little like more, you know, like, ever had one of them smoked briskets before?
I love good, thick, chewy Italian meatballs.
Yep. Salty, greasy meatballs. All right. Yeah, tutufreaks.com, where we have a million nerd podcasts. What about you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter account where I also like to live tweet Star Wars Rebels when I watch it. And I also have my own Twitter at Hope Malnex, and I'm the news beat writer for What the Fangirl. So you can come see what we're doing over there. And I'm very excited. My editors just met their goal on Patreon, the What the Fangirl Patreon. And they're going to start drunk podcasting, and I'm very excited about that.
I got stressed out last time I watched one of your live tweet, or I went through one of your live tweets of a Rebels episode. Because I was looking at it and going, man, this is a lot of work.
Yeah.
Digging up those GIFs, man. There's you put up a lot, you know. And I mean, people do put up GIFs and reactions to things, but you're picking out the right GIF for every reaction to it. And that's a lot of work.
Yeah. I do it a little bit differently on Twitter, but that's what I do on Tumblr. I do, like, instant reactions. And I used to do it for Once Upon a Time. I did it for about 4 seasons, and then Once Upon a Time just became a train wreck, and I just wanted the train wreck. So I started doing it in season 2 of Rebels, doing instant reactions. And people like them. They're fun. They're a lot of fun. It does take a lot of work. Like, when Rebels has, like, an hour-long special, it takes me so long to do one.
Right. Yeah, I imagine.
So the 30-minute episodes aren't bad, because I can usually do it within about an hour and a half. It's just, it's really sucky that, like, now that Tumblr updated, I used to be able to copy and paste right into the post and then just, like, put the GIFs in between all the posts. But now you have to copy and paste a line at a time.
Oh, jeez. So
I have to print one line and then put the GIF, and then copy and paste the next line and then put a GIF. And so, like, it takes me so much longer to do it now, but I really enjoy doing that. It's a lot of fun, and people seem to really enjoy it, so. But yeah, I like putting up instant reactions for Rebels, so. But that's what I do. I didn't do one for the last week's episode, though, because I was on vacation, and it was a relatively fun little episode.
It was a fun little episode, but it wasn't one of the big, you know, we're coming on the big bangers of the episodes coming up. That's how they usually run.
And I'm kind of bummed because I've been really wanting a good Zeb episode, because The Honorable Ones was probably my favorite episode of Rebels until the season 2 finale with Ahsoka and Vader. Like, The Honorable
Ones.
We
might get one, but I have a feeling it's going to be pretty... I mean, you never can... The previews always focus on whatever the big, you know, ultimate confrontation at the end is, which is obviously Obi-Wan Kenobi, but... There could be, we could have a couple more just little episodic episodes in there.
Yeah.
Either way, I don't care. I'm loving it. What's funny is every time I watch Rebels, there's a little sense of relief because I'm like, oh, I can relax. I don't have to take notes on these episodes yet. I'm so used to getting out my notebook whenever animated Star Wars starts. That I'm just like, oh, I can just watch this.
It will happen. We will one day get to Rebels.
Yeah, oh yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah, me too.
Job security.
For Warhead, I did tweet out, Mutton Chop Boyfriend warns his hairy boo, and the evil blueberry found them.
Yo, I look forward to the day where we're in the hundreds of episodes and we're starting to cover Rebels. That's going to be great.
I can't wait. Like, I...
And there'll
I,
like, be, like, many, many seasons of... You know, we'll have many seasons of Rebels, hopefully, to cover. I don't see it getting canceled in the near future.
Yeah, like, and for me, I've been just sort of, like... I don't mean to, but as I'm watching Rebels, I'm just like, I want to talk about this point in 4 years.
I hope they do Rebels, like, six or seven seasons, and like, somewhere in the, like, fifth season, they start planning another animated series, you know, that builds off Rebels, but it's a little different, or maybe it's in the Force Awakens time period or something, you know, but using the same team. I'd love to see them do six or seven seasons of Rebels and then do, you know, some, you know, the Young Knights of Ren or something, you know, who knows?
Yeah. They could really go
by that time there'll be three, you know, the other trilogy will be wrapping up, and then they'll know where they, what cracks and crevices they could work in, or
they could definitely work into like the 20-year gap between episode 6 and episode 7.
Sure. Oh yeah.
There's a massive 20-year gap there.
And once you have those three movies, that whole that you can do stuff in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, we already kind of have, like, the beginning of that. Like, Shattered Empire is all about Poe's parents. And Poe's, like, a toddler.
Yeah.
That. So, I mean, like, they, like, there's so much space there. Like, they could cover the rise of the First Order. Like, there's a lot they could do there.
Yeah.
So, well, that's all I have. Do you have anything else, Chris?
No, we'll be back next week. Tearing through season 3. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, what is next week? I don't even know.
I have no idea.
Oh, let's see. I still have it pulled up.
You're the expert.
Next week is Sphere of Influence. This one is... Yay!
Oh, batten down the hatches. It's probably going to be a long one.
Oh, no. It has Rio Chuchi in it, and that's my girl. It's Rio Chuchi, and I love her, and we haven't had her back since, like, season 1. And we have the return of Ahsoka.
I was just going to say, so Ahsoka's probably back, too.
Yeah, but we have Rio Chuchi. Oh, I'm so excited. It looks like Rio's in next week's episode, too. So this is going to be fun. I'm excited. Yeah, my girls. Girls next week. Girl party. It's going to be Lesbian O'Clock next week. Lesbian O'Clock.
Girl party. Girl party. No party. No Jar Jar. No Jar Jar.
No boys allowed. Boys out. Boys are gross. Gross. Boys. Okay, bye.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at 2TrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, 2 True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the 2 True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at 2TrueFreaks.com. 2 True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. T-R-U-E-F-R-E-A-K-S.
You can email 2 True Freaks directly at 2TrueFreaks@gmail.com.
2 True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search 2 True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find 2 True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for 2 True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about 2 True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
2 True Freaks.
Where have you been, Lord? Rattle my son. Oh, make my bed soon. For I'm weary from hunting.